Therefore, the sages were very much afraid of incurring sinful reaction. The law of karma prohibits a person, even though associated with a mischievous individual. By electing Bennett to the throne, the saintly sages certainly associated with him. Ultimately, King Bennett became so mischievous that the saintly sages actually became afraid of becoming contaminated by his activities. Thus, before taking any action against him, the sages tried to pacify and correct him so that he might turn from his mischief. Nirupita Prajapala sa yugam sativai praja tathapi sanpaye mahum nasmamsta patakans prishet. We appointed this Vena king of the state. We appointed this Vena king of the state in order to give protection to the citizens, but now he has become the enemy of the citizens. Despite all these discrepancies, we should at once try to pacify him. By doing so, we may not be tied by the sinful results caused by him.
We can see in
India now, the Prime Minister Narendra Modi, and he made certain promises at his election campaign. One of those promises was, for example, to protect cows, right? And we can see that he's actually living according to his promises, that he's fulfilling those promises, establishing much harder cow protection laws in the state. As many of you know, that there have always been cow protection laws in many states in India, but not everywhere. And so, in more than half of the states, that the cow slaughter is forbidden. But then people would circumvent this law because they would take these cows out of that state into the state where it was not forbidden, slaughter these cows there, and bring the beef back to the original state for consumption. Like that. And so, but Narendra Modi decided, okay, let me, you know, stop it. And then he actually criminalized beef eating in certain states. For example, Maharashtra. Beef eating is criminalized. And this is something which was not done before him. And it's very surprising that Modi is working on the levels where he knows what's happening on the government level. And he said one business committee in central government, which was in charge of business affairs and consisting of Muslims, and they supported that idea. They said, you know, the more the cows are protected, the better it is for the economy of the country. So Muslims supported. But the Hindus were opposing that to such an extent that in Karnataka, which is of course one of the most materialistic states, communist states, right? And Prabhupada was very clear that communists are demons. That's why, you know, the Hare Krishna movement had so much oppression and opposition in communist Russia. Because Prabhupada was crystal clear, you know, like, those people who deny the existence of God are demons. So in communist Russia, they were denying the existence of God. So it was very clear who these people are. And so, yeah, Karnataka is also a communist state. And so they, to protest the law, they organized beef-eating festival in Karnataka. Right? And then the wife of this devotee who is working with the government, she's taking a course in university, and in there, they just kind of had a discussion among students. What do you think about the law? Beef eating criminalization. And she was very surprised that in her class, which was consisting of Hindu students only, she was the only one who said it was a good law. Everybody else said why the government should interfere with people's eating habits. It's like so crazy that the people who're supposed to know Dharma, they oppose Dharma. So this is what's happening in Kali Yuga. Why? Because of their lack of spiritual knowledge and even culture, and because of their stupidity in trying to imitate America, the great country of America. They've lost their culture, they've lost everything. And so that's why Krishna consciousness movement is so important, because it educates people. And it is horrific how much ignorance is there amongst Hindus. It's unbelievable. Like, there is one network which promotes some of courses, leadership training and all this stuff. And it's organized by one Hindu businessman. And funny enough, his name is Vishen, right? Which indicates Vishnu, right? So he has a very spiritual name. And then he shares his kind of journey in self-development, and he says most important thing in life is to be free thinking individual. Think for yourself, don't follow any dogmas. And then he gives an example. He said, when I was young and coming from Hindu family and also Gujarati family, he said, you know, we never had beef in our house. It was something which was not done. And then at some point, you know, going to the school and mixing with other children, he grew up in Malaysia. And he said, you know, all the other children are eating their, you know, burgers. And he said, you know, I couldn't do that because we were not eating meat in our family. But then he said, I came home and I was asking my mother, so why can't we have beef? And the mother said, well, because we're Hindus, and so we're not taking beef. And he said, but why is it, you know, what's the problem with beef? And the mother told him, I don't know exactly, but you can do your own research and try to figure it out. And then he said, I went away and I was thinking, why Hindus are not taking beef? What's the problem with it? And then he said, I came to the conclusion that because earlier in history we were living in rural environment, and so we had cows as our pets, and you don't eat your pet, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why Hindus are not eating cows. And so he came back to his mother and he said, this is what I think, that because historically we had cows as our pets, so that's why we're not eating beef. And the mother said, yeah, it looks true. I think you have the right conclusion. And then he said, but now we're not living in a village anymore. And instead of cows, we have dogs and cats as our pets, right? Mother said, yes, it is true. And we're not eating dogs and cats. She said, yes, of course we don't. And then he said, but we don't have cows as our pets anymore, so I suppose now we can eat the cow. And mother said, yeah, it also sounds logical. And then he said, okay, then I'll go and have my burger. She said, yeah, go ahead. So, and after I listened to that nonsense, I wrote a letter to him saying that you are a complete idiot. This is not the reason why in any culture we don't eat cows, because cow is the mother, and you don't eat your mother's flesh under any circumstances. It's not human, it's, you know, something which is done by demons. So that's why You know, you should not be doing that, and you should actually educate yourself about your own culture. But he's a very prominent leader, and this kind of nonsense he's promoting to millions of people. And this is horrible, right? And so, therefore, it's really important for us to think, what can we do in order to educate people on a massive scale in Vedic knowledge? Because otherwise, even those people who are supposed to know the knowledge, even they are so ignorant, what to speak of innocent people, right? And if these ignorant people gain prominence, they pollute the minds of so many other people, right? And so, we can see that even if the political leader in Kali Yuga is doing the right thing, but the population is so degraded that even political leaders cannot do anything. What to speak of the political leaders pushing the wrong thing, which is actually happening in a big way. And of course, Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada is very clear, the whole degradation starts from eating meat. Like Prabhupada said, that meat eater can never understand God. And we've done a little research, and it shows very interesting figures that in United States of America, every year, $38 billion are given by the government as subsidy for meat industry. $38 billion every year. Just imagine. Because if people would have to, you know, it's like so simple. If people would have to pay the real price of the meat, and we're not talking about the karmic reactions, because that, if they would know that price, they would forget about it for life, right? But even like monetary, if they would have to pay the real price for the meat, half of the population would automatically become vegetarian, just for economical reasons, right? Because people would think, why do I have to spend so much money on meat products? But because the government is subsidizing the meat and make, and it's horrendous what they do. Like in Japan, we were taking a break while driving in that, what do you call it, stopover place, and then they have a little restaurant there, and one devotee pointed out to me the prices, and it was like vegetarian preparation was more expensive, like twice as expensive as the meat preparation. So if, how this is possible, that piece of vegetable is costing more than a piece of meat. It's impossible, right? But they make it possible because they take all of your money, and I'm quite sure, I haven't checked, but I'm pretty sure Australia is the same story exactly. They take all your money, and with this money, they subsidize meat to make the meat cheaper for people, right? And so this is what's happening. That because of this ignorance on the top level, the entire population is suffering and going to hell, basically speaking, right? And so that's why Srila Prabhupada said that the modern society, you know, they have so many luxuries and so many advantages, but they don't have head, right? It's like headless chicken running around. So, and that's why he made it very, very clear that the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement is to train up brahmanas, to train up spiritual guides for the society, because the whole world is in such a deep ignorance about everything. And so it is really important for us to educate, train, and influence people in the right way. And somehow we are achieving something. It's very interesting that there is a kind of race against the clock happening, that degradation is happening. At the same time, many people realizing what's going on and that they want to change their lives. Historically, vegetarianism was, really marginalized movement. I've learned that the first still functioning vegetarian restaurant in London was Govinda's restaurant. And nowadays there are so many vegetarian, vegan restaurants, raw vegan, anything, right? You can think of, available all over the city. But our Govinda restaurant was the first one. And so, in many ways we can see how the Hare Krishna movement is pioneering the positive work, and nowadays, for example, a push for vegetarian and vegan lifestyle becomes global. And it's very interesting that recently we had, maybe a couple of years back, two very prominent people. One is the head of Virgin Group of Companies, Richard Branson. And the other one is a very prominent Hollywood actor, Leonardo DiCaprio. And they came together and they have organized in New York a special event demanding global ban on beef. And I mean, I saw the video clip. I don't know how many people participated. It was like you couldn't see the end of it, right? Literally ocean of people in New York. And they push for it very hard that beef has to be banned all over the planet. And so it's very interesting how these two tides are kind of rising at the same time. So actually this is what Prabhupada predicted, that with the development of Krishna consciousness, the society will become polarized, firstly, right? Because he said, in the same way as you add lemon juice to the milk, it becomes separated in the way it occurs. So, in the same way, society becomes separated into demonic and divine if you add Krishna consciousness to it. And we can actually see this happening right now. How polarization is happening big time. Because it's really confusing time, right? We don't know whether society is advancing or degrading. Because both things are happening at the same time at a great speed. And I was thinking they're pushing for it so hard, but at the same time there are so many people who are so attached to their beef and steaks and everything else, right? That if there is a law criminalizing beef eating, there could be a serious backlash. And actually these leaders of the movement could be assassinated. Even because, you try to take away people's attachment they might become really angry. And so I was thinking that our role is really irreplaceable in that sense, because we are not trying to force people to stop the bad, but our goal is to give people higher taste. This is how so many people who were eating meat before Krishna consciousness, they are giving it up without any effort because of the higher taste, right? Krishna consciousness gives them the higher taste and they automatically lose the lower taste. It's like one story from Russia. One man, he came across devotees on the street and they distributed him Bhagavad Gita. And he was really into philosophy. So he brought Bhagavad Gita home, started reading it. But he was a voracious meat eater as well. And when he came across the passage where Prabhupada condemned meat eating, he said, "No, this book is not for me. They're trying to take away, you know, my joy in life. So I'm not going to read this book. I'd rather go and prepare some meat for myself." So he went and he started cooking, and then he ate, and then he felt so disgusted that he actually threw it up. And he was thinking, something must be wrong with my health. So he tried it again, same thing happened. And no matter how many times he tried, he just couldn't eat meat anymore. Just by, you know, reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And he loved meat like anything. And then he thought, wow, it's amazing. You know, these Hare Krishnas, they kind of put some spell on me or something. I cannot eat my meat anymore. So, okay, I suppose now I will have to go vegetarian. But, you know, some people, they're so ignorant about it that they think to be vegetarian means to eat like, you know, cucumbers till the end of their lives or something. And so he actually went to the shop and he bought himself like bunch of cucumbers. And he came back home and with tears in his eyes he started like chewing on these cucumbers. And then after doing that for a couple of days he realized, you know, that it's not going to work like that. I cannot survive on cucumbers. So these people ruined my life. So I guess I have to go and find them and ask them, how can I survive like this, being vegetarian? And so he went, he found the temple, and luckily it was Sunday. And so he came and he kind of stopped one devotee and said, "How do you survive being vegetarian?" And the devotee, like, round face, he said, "Well, we survive very nicely. Let us help you out. So they brought him to the Sunday feast. They gave him full plate and he said, "Well, that's easy. You know, if I eat like that, why do I have to think about meat at all?" But then he said, "It means I have to learn how to cook all this." And so he signed up for cooking course, and of course devotees then taught him how to offer the food and how to chant like Krishna. So now he's full-time devotee and actually one of the leaders. So it is like that, that this movement is providing people with high taste. It's like if you have prasadam, you can't even think of all this trash food, right? All this horrible pieces of corpses, etc., etc. And therefore, I was thinking that Ibu would actually establish partnership with these people, because these people, they go against negative things, which is good. But they have no idea of persona. And so they cannot provide positive alternative, which is so important. Right? And that's why our role is actually irreplaceable. You know, our position is so unique. We are actually having the missing link to every single goodwill effort which is happening at the moment on the planet, whether it is happening under the influence of Prabhupada's books, the holy names, or just by the will of the Supreme Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is from the heart just encouraging some people to do some good things. And I thought that our problem is that we're so isolated from the society and we have no even information, no idea of what's going on, and therefore we don't even think of how to connect with these people and how to work with them, which is really speaking the only way forward, because Mahabharata is very clear that Sangha Shakti Kaloyuge, in this age, the only source of power is association, right? Strength in numbers, as Srinivas Acharya says, Sankhya Purvaka. Whether these are the numbers of the holy name you chant, or the numbers of devotees who come together, or the numbers of people who are taking part in any devotional activities. And you can see it so clearly that if few people are chanting Hare Krishna, people think, oh, this is something strange, this is something which I have nothing to do with. But if thousands of people are chanting Hare Krishna, then so many of them will think, wow, something is happening here. Everybody is chanting Hare Krishna except myself. Maybe I should also start doing that. So, yeah, this is the only thing which can affect people. Numbers, scale. And that's why it's really important for us to do what Prabhupada wanted us to do, and think big. It's very interesting that this is the first and foremost element in becoming successful in life in general, and this is what Prabhupada claimed in a joking way, was his biggest problem. Right? He said, my biggest problem was I could never think small. I was always thinking big. And you can see he was thinking big, and he did really big. Right? Because Krishna is the one who fulfills big desires. And we can see from the Bhagavatam that Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, that's their legitimate position, that they think not only of themselves, they're not only concerned about themselves or their small little community, they think of the whole state. And in here, this was the global rule, right? And so, thinking of the benefit of the whole world. And this is what devotees are meant to be. And this is the reason Prabhupada created this movement. And so, it's really important for us to think and plan and prepare ourselves to kind of take, of course, qualify and take responsibility not only for our own lives, not only for our community, but think on the scale of the greater community. That's why many people say that the secret of success is think globally, act locally. Right? And so we can see that the brahmanas in here, they think globally and they act locally, sorting out Veda. Of course, I started with the positive approach, trying to give him some encouragement, but we know that it did work. At the end, they had to go for Dhamma. They had to remove him from the position finally. At the end, Bhagavan is teaching us how to act in Krishna consciousness and what to aim at. And what's the purpose of the Krishna consciousness? Any questions? Yes?
In the Bhagavad it was explained that the brahmanas were afraid because they were afraid of the sinful reactions which they were accrued because of Vena's sinful activities. They were afraid because they elected him to be a king. So I'm just wondering, with democracy system, when the citizens elect the president, it seems like they will accrue the sinful reactions due to the activities and decisions the president or whoever the ruler is.
Yes.
Would that apply in the democracy system?
Well, of course, like from what I know in here in Australia, you can't even like ignore the elections, right? If you don't go, you will be penalized, right? You don't have to pay a lot of money if you don't vote. So in that sense, they force everyone to, you know, because yeah, I guess the choice is so useless that if they won't force people, no one would even bother. Right? what's the difference, you know? Like, do we select one idiot over the other? So it doesn't make any difference. Right? So in that way, because you are forced to do that, to make that useless choice, I don't think that you are responsible.
But we can make invalidate. We pick all of them, so this ticket will be done. That's what I do. I have to go there and I pick all of them, and so no one can be chosen from my ticket.
Interesting approach. But I was thinking that, you know, we incur more reactions, not just for these, you know, for the formal participation, non-participation, but we incur reactions for not actually doing much to encourage better leadership. Because, you know, how it's happening that some people, they rise through the ranks, and they start off on a kind of lower political levels, and then they become prominent, and then they achieve power. And so, if we would work with these people, potential leaders, and try to, you know, give them good association and educate them, etc., etc., as much as we can, then in time, one of those people rising through the ranks could become a leader and could actually institute some positive changes. So I think this is much more important for us, you know, that instead of just worrying about the formalities of ticking the boxes or not ticking the boxes, actually thinking, how could we, and even the present leadership, we could influence them. And devotees are doing that in some places, like in UK, devotees are very successful with their communications, and they had, you know, they started the Amati school and got government funding for that, serious funding, I mean, to, and this is why I'm saying that if you want to do some, anything serious, we don't have this kind of money to do any large-scale effective activity. Only government has this kind of money. Because this one school costed 25 million British pounds, which I suppose is in the range of 45 million Australian dollars, right? Just one school. I mean, can we imagine having, I mean, I know that devotees in Sydney, they try to, you know, build a temple, a second temple in the area where most of the devotees live, Blacktown, Parramatta. And it's costing them 20-something million dollars, estimated. And they really struggle where to find this money. And how long will it take? Long time. Even though Sydney, I suppose, is the wealthiest. Sydney is the wealthiest city in Australia, right? Is it? Yeah. But still, the kind of devotees in our community, mostly working class, employees, right? So, employee means 90% of what you make is taken by the boss, and just few peanuts are thrown on your plate, okay, you have it, you know, just make sure you survive. It's kind of, you know, modern day slavery. So that's why devotees are really, really struggling, you know, like, how can we come up with this 22 million dollars? But there are so many fathers who are spending this kind of money and even more just on their daughter's wedding. Just a few days' expenses. That's it. And we don't even know about these people, what to speak of being connected to them and what to speak of them doing something for us. So, you know, for so many even individuals in our society, this kind of money is like, come on, 20, 30 million dollars is nothing. But for us, because, you know, we are functioning on such a lower strata, for us it's like, wow, how do we make it happen, right? Again, small thinking. And but the governments have so much money. I mean, just British government alone gives out 2 billion pounds every year for the, as they call, charitable organizations or non-profit organizations to divide between themselves. And this is only government funding, not to speak of private funding, so there is unlimited wealth available for us, for our work, if we do it right. And yeah, the one is applied for this school because they did it in such a way that, you know, instead of just benefiting ourselves, our little Hare Krishna community, we want to do it for larger community, at least for Hindu community, and Hindu community is larger than just Hare Krishna's. And the government said, okay, the Hindu community is doing it, and the devotees built a very nice school. Queen to visit the school, and when the queen came, the devotees are so creative, they kind of And the kind of food we give to the children, and of course they gave you a prasadam. And then at the end they gave you the picture of Lord Chaitanya saying he's the founder of our tradition, and his values were always to learn by the Lord and develop humility, tolerance, and respect. And the queen was so impressed, she said, it's amazing. These are amazing values we are installing with your children. So why do we have only one school? And the devotees were saying, we start with this one school. She said, no problem. We'll pay. Open as many schools as you can. And think of secondary schools also, because these children are growing. So they will have to continue their education. And so now, few years later, instead of one school, devotees already have 6 schools. Right? And so this is what's happening, right? I was thinking about this example of Prabhupada gives, you know, the sparrow trying to drink the ocean, and then Garuda comes to help. Right? And so, yeah, there are plenty of very, very powerful people in this world, and many of these people are God conscious. Incidentally, the queen is the head of Anglican Church as well. So she's not an atheist person, so she believes in God. And actually Prabhupada said in one class, she is the most pious lady on earth. So, because, you know, she's a devotee and she does a lot of good looking after the population. And this country is also part of the British Commonwealth, and so the British system is also functioning here. And there are amazing advantages devotees could be taken. And working with these people will help us to educate them about Krishna consciousness, Vedic culture, spiritual values, etc., etc. And then once these people are educated, then they will be doing the right thing. So I was thinking this is much more important responsibility we should be taking rather than thinking of ticking the boxes or not ticking the boxes. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the you know, you were mentioning about Prabhupada's thinking big. When we are in the, you know, I was having a chat with one devotee yesterday, and then he was pointing out some of the small faults that we have, but anyway, my question is that when we have so many services and we have so much happening within the established situation, it's hard enough to, you know, just maintain it. And so we're just kind of running around trying to keep things going. And you really don't have the time and the energy to think about anything bigger. And so at the end of the day, if you just kind of kept everything together, then you're kind of happy.
Yes, I know. But Prabhupada said in most cases that to be lazy is not good, right? But yet he approved one kind of laziness. What is that laziness which was approved by Prabhupada? Lazy intelligence, right? And who's supposed to have lazy intelligence? Brahmanas, right? And who devotees supposed to be? Brahmanas, right? And so it's really important that, you know, of course it might seem to be fun working hard, but for Brahmana it's more suitable to work smart rather than work hard, right? And Prabhupada said, you know, if you do things right, why you have to do everything yourself? Where are your helpers? Right? And so it's like you're connected to some people, you're preaching to some people, you're cultivating some people, you're looking after some people. Why can't they get involved? Right? And if you organize things in the right way, you can have so many other people, you know, kind of more junior devotees, those who are not yet having this capacity of thinking big, let them do the simple tasks. And those who have capacity of thinking big, let them have some free time for planning and relationship building and education and training and everything else, you know, all the facets of brahminical work, because this is the most important thing. So yeah, it's just a matter of organizing our lives in the right way and having priority, prioritizing our activities, right? What is the most important thing? And sometimes, yes, for more important things, we might have to sacrifice less important things. Okay, so thank you very much. Thank you.